Welcome to the Business Beat. I'm Steve D'Agostino. I'll talk with Stacy Mitchell of the New Rules Project. We'll talk about designing rules as if community matters.
There's been this centralization of both our economy and in many cases our politics. And the result is that the power at the local level, the ability of individuals to make meaningful decisions about their lives, both in terms of what happens economically in their community as well as politically, has been greatly eroded.
On the Business Beat, on WICN and at WICN.org. The New Rules Project, a program of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, started in 1998. It continues to bring fresh, new policy solutions to communities and states to ensure that they are designing rules as if community matters. The New Rules Project features a number of policy areas and several key programs and initiatives, including the Hometown Advantage, Telecommunications as Commons Initiative, Biofuels and Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicles, and Climate Neutral Bonding. Stacy Mitchell is a senior researcher with the New Rules Project. She directs its initiative to curb the power of big box retailers and strengthen locally owned businesses. She has served as an advisor to numerous community and small business organizations and has helped dozens of cities and towns implement new land use and economic development policies. Stacy's latest books, Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Retailers, and The Fight for America's Independent Businesses, has appeared on several top 10 lists and was described by Bill McKibben, a nationally acclaimed author, educator, and environmentalist, as the ultimate account of the single most important economic trend in our country. In addition to her work with the New Rules Project, Stacy chairs the American Independent Business Alliance and is a founding board member of the Portland Independent Business and Community Alliance in Maine. Stacy, welcome to the Business Beat.
Great to be with you.
What are new rules and why are they needed now?
Well, we have found in doing over 35 years of work in communities working to strengthen local economies, to build sustainable systems, and to nurture local democracy, is that public policy is really stacked against local. It's stacked against local businesses. It's stacked against communities. And so about 12 years ago, we launched the New Rules Project to do that, to research and advocate a set of new rules, policies at the local, state, and federal level that will tilt the playing field back in favor of community, in favor of local economies.
Sort of the irony is that some of the people or some of the organizations, institutions behind the breakdown of community actually live in communities. So why would they shoot themselves in the foot historically?
Well, what we have seen is that, you know, there has been just enormous favoritism for large-scale production systems, for corporate ownership, global corporations, long-distance transportation. You know, there has been the centralization of both our economy and, in many cases, our politics. And the result is that the power at the local level, the ability of individuals to make meaningful decisions about their lives, both in terms of what happens economically in their community as well as politically, has been greatly eroded.
So are the multinational corporations essentially now the new mill owners, where they call all the shots in a local community back in the days of the woolen mills or the paper mills or the other sorts of mills that dominated New England back in the 1800s, early 1900s?
I think that's very true. Corporations, you know, just about every sector of our economy, whether it's, you know, farming or banking or retail, it has become controlled by a relatively few giant global corporations. And of course, they're highly centralized in their decision making. And, you know, they have one overriding goal, which is to maximize profits, which means that the decisions that they make are not tempered by any kind of concern about the effects that those decisions might have on your community or on the environment. It's very different from a more kind of entrepreneurial model of the economy where business is owned locally and where that decision-making is really happening. Those decisions are made by people who live in the community and who feel the impacts of those decisions and therefore tend to make choices that are different.
Obviously, the people who are doing the community building work at the local level get it. Are you seeing any signs that people in corporate America, the top people in corporate America, are starting to realize, hey, there's something wrong here. We're breaking something that we shouldn't be breaking, and it's affecting us just as individuals, as human beings, and our families.
Well, I think our analysis is really structural. It's not about individuals or even about individual companies per se. I mean, I do a lot of criticizing of Walmart, for example, but it's not Walmart per se so much as it's this particular business model.
Business model is still driven by human beings. At some point, did they stop being human beings, or are they starting to wake up and go, oh my gosh, this is wrong what we've done here?
Well, I think what I think is that the structure, the corporate structure, overwhelms any sort of individual thoughts on the part of the people within those companies.
Sort of like in Star Wars.
At the end of the day, however they feel as individuals is sort of irrelevant.
Sort of like in Star Trek, we are Borg.
Yes.
What are the policy areas of the New Rules Project?
Well, we work across different sectors of the economy. At this particular moment, we've got a lot of concentration in energy policy. We're also do a lot of work around local business, particularly sort of storefront business, retail businesses, local services that, you know, line a downtown, ideally in neighborhoods. We work on publicly owned broadband. So instead of having one or two essentially monopoly broadband internet providers, a cable company, maybe, and a phone company, we're working to help communities build publicly owned broadband that can deliver television, internet, and phone at much lower rates and be controlled by the community.
So, are you supportive of the Net Neutrality Act?
Yes.
And that's before Congress.
You'll have to get my colleague Chris Mitchell on if you want to talk in real detail about our broadband.
Yeah, I didn't want to get into detail on that. I just wanted to see if you guys supported that.
Yes, absolutely.
What are the programs and initiatives of the New Rules Project?
Well, the fourth area I was going to mention that we're doing work in is we recently launched a community banking initiative, and that sort of really grows in a way out of the financial crisis. But we're looking at the at the question of whether small banks are valuable, and if so, should we have policies in place to support them.
And I'm sorry for cutting you off, and I'm glad that you got that in, because later on in this interview we'll be talking about the Move Your Money campaign, which is one manifestation of that effort. You're listening to The Business Beat on WICN and at WICN.org. I'm Steve D'Agostino. I'm talking with Stacy Mitchell of the New Rules Project. We're talking about designing rules as if community matters. So let's get back to that question about the programs and initiatives of the New Rules Project. We talked about the policy areas. What are the specific programs and initiatives?
Well, we work in each of those four areas, and that's our primary focus. How we work depends a little bit on the particular issue area. So, for example, in the local business work, I work with citizens groups and city councils around the country, local business organizations, around putting in place planning and economic development policies that strengthen independent businesses and that curb the proliferation of chains. So in that particular category, we're working mostly at the local level, often in partnership with grassroots organizations, sometimes on state legislation. Our energy work is very much about state legislation, sometimes federal, and there the main sort of question right now is, as we as a country transition to renewables, there are really two models open to us. One is a model where wind turbines are giant wind turbine fields are sort of owned by big companies, very centralized kind of model, or we can have a scenario where lots of small landowners, lots of farmers, maybe have one or two wind turbines on their land, tap into the grid. And what that produces is not only the renewable power, but a much more dispersed ownership structure. And so the economic benefits of that transition accrue to local communities.
Going back to the big box retailers, are they necessarily evil, or is it just that there are way too many of them, and as a result, they pose too much of a threat to the way too many of the local independent retailers across the country?
Over the last 25 years or so, we have seen large retail chains just mushroom and proliferate around the country and gain a staggering share of the market. Walmart captures about one out of every $10 that Americans spend at stores, captures nearly one out of every $4 that Americans spend on groceries. It's the largest grocer in the country. Home Depot and Lowe's together have about half of all hardware and building supply sales. And I could go on down the list. We have just seen this explosive growth of these big retail chains. And as they have grown and as they have gained market share, we have lost tens of thousands of independent businesses. So the pendulum has swung very far in the direction of these big companies. And I argue in my book and elsewhere that we have paid a huge hidden cost for that, and that this transition has elevated retailers to some of the most powerful companies in our economy, because they not only control retail, but by virtue of being the gatekeepers through which all these other products have to pass, the retailers now effectively control much of manufacturing. They're the ones who decide where goods get made, what goods get produced, and under what circumstances. And so I'm very concerned about the power of Walmart and other retailers in the economy, and also about their core business model and its impact on communities.
Should there not be any big box retailers, or should there just be not as many of them as there are right now?
Well, you know, I think that's, you know, sort of a speculative question that's fairly far removed from the reality of where we are right now. What we have been urging...
Well, I'm just trying to find out if you are necessarily adamantly opposed to big box retailers of any size, shape, or number, or is it that there are just way too many of them for our own common good?
Well, I think it's both in a way. You know, I think if big box retail were a small percentage of the overall retail market, I may still see some problems with those stores, and we can talk about their impact on the environment and the way they impact communities. I mean, if you're a town that that has one, there are significant reasons not to want to have any in your community. But if they were a very small overall piece of the retail pie, they wouldn't be nearly as dangerous as they are, because they've become, in effect, monopolies.
Isn't it unrealistic to expect communities to be self-sufficient and not rely on these outside chains, franchises, large organizations, corporations?
Well, we're the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and I think there's a real distinction between self-reliance and self-sufficiency. There's a difference. No community is self-sufficient, nor could it ever be, or nor would you ever want it to be. I mean, there are things, things that grow in other places that may not grow in your locality. There are things that are made elsewhere that may not be made, may not be possible to make where you are. Not every community is going to manufacture its own, jet aircraft. I mean, that's just not how things work. But that said, and trade has been part of humankind, really forever. People have traded what they do well for what another community does well. But the question is, is really about self-reliance. And to me, self-reliance means communities that are self-conscious and self-determining, that they control their own future. And that means that they need to have enough economic resources under their control to, as I said, to control their future, that we're not completely colonized, if you will, by global corporations, but that we have a measure of self-reliance in terms of producing some things locally that we need, in terms of having that ownership local to a large degree, and in terms of having that active democratic citizenry, so that, as I said, our future is really in our own hands.
You're listening to The Business Beat on WICN and at WICN.org. I'm Steve D'Agostino. I'm talking with Stacy Mitchell of the New Rules Project. We're talking about designing rules as if community matters. To hear last month's shows, visit the archive at WICN.org. The chains, the franchises, the big box stores, the large corporations, don't they bring economies of scale, though, to the United States economy? Isn't that beneficial?
Well, I think that I think that the economies of scale, you know, run out at a certain point. Certainly, don't need to be the size of Walmart to achieve those. But the question becomes: at what are you giving up in exchange for those economies of scale? And what I found is that, you know, if you look at independent retailers, there are a number of ways in which they're often more efficient than their corporate competitors. Retailers that are able to source locally, for example, in the case of, say, a neighborhood grocer that sources a lot of the food that they carry from farmers and regional food producers, that shortens transportation and shortens the distance and therefore is, in many respects, a more efficient model. We're also seeing that one of the big things that I advocate are for wholesale cooperatives, you know, things like Ace Hardware, which is a co-op that is owned by independent hardware stores across the country. There are others that exist in other retail categories. But what you find is that through those buying cooperatives, independent retailers are often able to achieve the same kind of volume discounts that you would see at a Home Depot or a Lowe's. And in fact, according to independent studies, if you look across a broad spectrum of goods, are actually quite price competitive. You know, look at that issue in another economic sector, you know, in the context of banks, for example. Economies of scale, according to many economists, are run out for banks at about $5 billion in assets. Banks over that size actually have diseconomies of scale. That is, that their bureaucracy is so bloated that, you know, gaining everything they do actually costs more than it does for a smaller bank. To put that in perspective, banks that are smaller than that size threshold have only about, 15-16% of the market. The rest of the banks out there and the giants like Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, are many, many, many times above the point at which the economies of scale are optimal. And so, I think this...
They've grown so big that they're supposedly too big to fail. That's how big they've grown.
Indeed.
Let me let you finish the thought that you were before I threw that thought in. What thought were you looking to finish there?
Well, I think it's a good illustration of the fact that in many sectors of our economy, it's not so much that these big companies are better or that they're more efficient, but they're more powerful, and that they are more powerful in terms of being able to sort of bully their way into communities. They're more powerful in terms of their lobbying ability and their ability to go to state legislatures and go to Congress and get laws passed that favor them in various ways. I mean, that's how the banks have grown to power, is not by being more efficient, but by being more powerful. I think the other thing I would just bring up briefly in the context of sort of thinking about efficiency is that as the price of oil goes up, which I think almost everyone agrees that that's almost inevitable, whether it's because of increased global demand or policies to reduce global warming that adds to the cost of oil, one way or another, the cost of oil is going to just continue to go up and up over the long term. What that means is that far-flung systems of global production and distribution, that is the Walmart model where things are produced in China and shipped all the way across the globe, is going to become much, much more expensive. And that efficiency really is going to be, is going to favor local economies, local systems of production and distribution.
Does localism pose a threat to those who are not in the majority? Does it allow those with means or power to essentially secede from responsibility for the whole, leaving the powerless essentially behind?
Well, I think if it were absolute, that would be the case, but it's not. You know, localism is really an approach that allows us to sort out, you know, which roles are appropriate for which levels of government. You know, the federal government provides our Bill of Rights. It's, you know, the guarantees of our citizenships. It's the mechanism that ensures that the rights of minorities are not overrun by majorities. So there's a place for federal and even global governance when it comes to certain kinds of issues. And I just mentioned global warming, and that's a great example. That's obviously something that we need to tackle, you know, locally to the extent that we can, but we also need federal and international mechanisms as well. So it's really about thinking where the appropriate level of government is, and there are many situations, you know, where that level is at the community level, where decision-making belongs at the local level, but not all decisions.
You're listening to The Business Beat on WICN and at WICN.org. I'm Steve D'Agostino. I'm talking with Stacy Mitchell of the New Rules Project. We're talking about designing rules as if community matters. Why would localism, and how would it guarantee efficient, environmentally benign development?
One of the things that happens in our sort of globalized economy is that we don't see the consequences of the choices that we make because they happen far away and are well removed from us. So, you know, one example is that we probably all have clothing in our closets that was made under conditions that we would find appalling, you know, perhaps by child laborers somewhere in another part of the globe. And if we had to, you know, see that in the process of making that purchasing decision, we wouldn't have bought that clothing, but we couldn't see it, and so we did. And this happens with environmental pollution as well. We don't necessarily see the consequences of our choices because it's so distant and so removed. We can't see it when we're standing in the aisles of the supercenter. One of the things that localizing our economies can do is make us much more aware of what those consequences and those impacts are. If a particular business is going to make a decision to say pave over a wetland, and it's happening in our community, that's something we can control. It's a decision that we can make about whether to patronize that business, or it's an action that we can take through our local government. But if it's happening in China, the chances are we're not going to take any sort of action. And I think that's, you know, one of the ways, I think that's one of the reasons that despite polls showing that people are overwhelmingly concerned about the state of the environment, a lot of our day-to-day actions don't necessarily reflect that because, as sort of consumers in this global system, we can't make the right choices.
As a child, I grew up in a mill town just outside of Worcester called Rochdale. There were three woolen mills, and running through Rochdale is the French River. And on certain days, the river would run blue, and another day it would run green, and another day it would run yellow, depending on the dyes they were using for the wool. We as kids thought that was really cool until we grew up and realized what was really going on. But back then, those mills employed people. They didn't raise a stink about it. So why today would, if we had these factories that are now in China actually in our own backyards, wouldn't people just put on the blinders like they did when I was a kid and go, well, it's providing me with a job, so what if the river is blue today, green tomorrow, and yellow the day after that?
Well, yeah, I think that's, you know, I would to some degree dispute your history in the sense that people did stand up to that, and they passed the Clean Water Act in 1970s, and our rivers are much cleaner today.
Oh, no, I agree with you there. I'm talking about the people who were living in that mill village. They didn't raise hell about it back then that I know.
Well, I think that, you know, I'm not suggesting an economic model where there's a single powerful mill owner who controls a town. I'm not suggesting a kind of company town.
Right,
which, okay. I think many of those mill towns were. I'm suggesting communities where there are lots and lots of independent entrepreneurs who, you know, maybe have a few employees, but by and large where people are making their own way. And I think, you know, there are other models like worker cooperatives and cooperative ownership structures for larger enterprises. But it doesn't negate also our role as citizens. And I think in many of those mill communities, you had this sort of one employer that the whole town was so incredibly dependent on that nobody wanted to go against them, and certainly not the local government, because those jobs were the basis of the economy. And they were often, you know, export-oriented jobs, so they weren't really oriented towards a local market. So the ability of people to act as sort of purchasers of those goods wasn't there either, because the goods were being exported somewhere else.
Is localism simply nostalgia for a simpler time?
You know, I would not describe it that way at all. I think it's it's something that as we have gone whole hog, if you will, towards this, you know, sort of modern globalization or corporate globalization, people have realized the limits of that and have realized many of the hidden costs of that. And more people are looking to, you know, reconnect with their community, are looking to have more of a say and a community self-determination. It's technology in many cases that can enable that in some ways. So no, it's not a nostalgic thing at all, but it's really about, I think what's dangerous is to assume that the path that we have been on is somehow inherently progress. You know, that's the assumption that gets made out there a lot, is that, you know, what has happened with our economy, the direction that we have taken is somehow inevitable, and that it's somehow inherently better than the past. And that's not necessarily the case. I think we need to look objectively at what the costs and benefits of this system have been. And I think if you look, the costs have really been quite high.
Is localism anti-technology? Is it being run by a bunch of Luddites?
Nope.
tell us why you're not a Luddite.
It's really not, and I think, you know, as our work on you know, publicly owned municipal broadband really illustrates, that technology can often be the foundation actually for building those systems where people have more of a say in their community, where people are more engaged, and where local business becomes more possible because of technology than it used to be.
So in the couple of minutes we get left, how can our listeners get more information about the New Rules Project and get involved in some of these initiatives?
Well, visit our website, which is newrules.org, and when you get there, it's N-E-W-R-U-L-E-S, newrules, one word, .org, and when you get there, if you click on policy areas, you'll get a drop-down menu. So if there's any of these areas that you're more interested in, banking, for example, or retail or the energy work, you can go straight to that subject area and get a sense of, see some of the reports that we're publishing, some of the data that we have out there, and then email us and let us know what's going on in your community, and we'd be happy to let you know how we might be able to help.
Stacy, thank you for being my guest.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
And thanks to you, our listeners, for listening to The Business Beat on WICN and at WICN.org. I'm Steve D'Agostino. I talked with Stacy Mitchell of the New Rules Project. We talked about designing rules as if community matters. To hear last month's shows, visit the archive at WICN.org.